Welcome to Winning the Moment, the podcast that explores the art of living the life you want and becoming the person you want to be. Your host, Cody Adent, is a published author and the mind behind the book, Winning the Moment. This isn't just a podcast. It's a guide and a roadmap to inspire and empower you to conquer life's challenges, embrace your wins, learn from your losses, and make the most of every single moment in your life.
Back to another episode of Winning the Moment. Today we have Tavish Calico, who is the co-founder and creative director of Bondeer. And this podcast is truly a journey. You're going to want to stick around because we go in all sorts of different topics. And if you're a fan of brand and creativity, you're going to love it. Thank you so much and stay tuned. Meeting with everyone.
Like the big dogs.
Yeah, like Joe Rogan and I are in the same pool, you know?
That's
so
tough.
So I've got a very long way to go. But we're growing. We're almost at 100 subscribers on YouTube now, which isn't much, but it's only been, you know, six months. Yeah, so I'm happy. And more than anything, I enjoy it. And there's been such good feedback from it because I think what's different, you know, from like a Joe Rogan is we're just having regular people conversations. And I think sometimes it's cool to see what a celebrity thinks, but you can't relate to them in the same capacity.
Right.
So to hear a regular person share their struggles and their successes and all of that, I think in some regards, there's more connectivity.
There's so much humanity to it.
Yeah, right.
Right. I mean, we're all just normal people.
Right.
Even celebrities. They don't think they
are. Yeah, no, they are normal people. The problem is too many people don't perceive them to be normal people.
Totally. Everything's so, skewed because
right.
of
so
that.
Then they put them on a threshold.
Yeah.
And think, well, whatever that person's saying is irrelevant to me because I can never get there.
Yeah.
But they may have these amazing philosophies that are universally true, but it's harder for someone to accept them because they think it's only true for them.
Right, right.
When it's actually true for everyone.
When it's like, we're going through the same stuff.
And I've been fortunate enough to work with Tavish, you know, on a couple different projects over the years. But Tavish, thanks for being here.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
So let's start to talk about branding and Bondeer. So that's how we started. That's how I got to meet you. Mm-hmm. I think the first project I worked with you on was the Cliff Rose.
Yeah.
When we were doing their conversion.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Still one of my favorite logos of all time.
Hey,
like
thanks. Me too.
The hummingbird and the rose together.
Oh,
like,
man. Oh. When that happened, it was magic. It was like, wow. That really is working.
It is,
you
just,
know,
it's
and it's
so
it's one of
cool.
those things. That's how it is.
I've never seen it duplicated in that capacity ever again, where like one image could be so representative.
Right.
It's very difficult to represent.
Yeah, that's the whole challenge.
A brand in an image without words.
It's funny. I was just telling this to a client I'm working with right now that I actually think that it's kind of funny. We place so much emphasis on this little 1-inch by 1-inch kind of image, right? And we ask it to do so much for us.
Right.
And I don't know. It's just a funny art form when you think about it.
It's hard.
It's a really tough one. And I don't know if people put their minds into it, but you're trying to convey meaning that's really deeply rooted for these organizations. And it has to be technically functional. Needs to be flexible and
well, and it's so hard too because then you've got like this odd, you know, let's say your client, like we just did a rebrand for this incredible lady in Gainesville, and she's owned this property for 30 years,
right?
And so it's like you're trying to help her understand what her logo could be, but it's so intimate and personal to her. And her reaction is so different than what the general public's reaction is because they're going to experience her for the first time without 30 years of history,
totally.
But to help her understand that is so difficult because to her. It's like a fabric of her life, you know,
which
makes
baby.
Which makes what happened at the Cliff Rose so amazing because that was similar. It was a 30-year a pivot and name change. And so I'm curious, like what started you in this industry? Was it art or like what?
Yeah. So I was always kind of this closeted art nerd kind of person.
Okay. And did you grow up here in St. George?
I grew up in St. George.
Okay.
Yeah. Born and raised. And you know, it's funny. I actually was inspired by my next door neighbors, they're my family.
Okay.
So two of the brothers to this day still are probably some of the best fine artists I've ever met.
Wow.
I mean, and they don't, one of them actually became a designer and that's really my entry point into this.
Okay.
So shout out to Travis Topham.
Travis Topham.
Yeah.
He played basketball, right?
No, that's Sky.
Sky. Okay, yeah.
So Sky is my best friend growing up.
Skyler had that game winner against Dixie High School.
Yeah,
he stole the inbounds pass.
Yeah,
and,
that's the one.
Yep.
So Sky's older brother, Travis.
Okay.
I call him my Yoda.
Okay.
To design. And, you know, he and his older brother, they were just incredible fine artists. I was always inspired. I remember they had this gallery down their staircase going downstairs that their mom would put all their pictures up.
When you say fine artists, what does that mean?
I mean, like pen and paper, okay. Ink, you know, got and it. Really detailed, beautiful, intricate, hyper-realism type stuff. And it was just always inspirational. And I was this little kid. I'm younger. And so I was this little kid, as a little kid, I was drawing dinosaurs and things
cars
like that. But eventually my sister, she had this record player and she got a hold of my parents' albums, all of her records. And
okay.
So she was just spinning albums. And so we were sitting there listening to the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, the Doors, the Kinks, like all of these old bands. And I remember looking at these album covers and just thinking they were so beautiful. And so I was actually, as a young kid, I was redrawing those bands' logos all the time.
Okay.
Then I got into snowboarding, and then it turned into snowboarding logos and all of that.
Yeah.
And I didn't really realize I was connecting to that kind of art form at that age. I eventually went on to fine arts, painting, and, you know, drawing with ink and paper and things like that. I ended up in school for that.
I was going to ask, do you have technical training in it then?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm a tortured artist, I guess, but I don't think I'm that great. so I don't know. I went to the formerly known Dixie State and for a year. And really, I'm not a school guy.
So you only went for 1 year.
I went for 1 year. I didn't even go into the art program. I had a 72 Chevy pickup truck that I was restoring.
Okay.
So I was using the auto body at the college to do that. I took a sociology class that I flunked. And then I actually had two art classes. And one of my art teachers maybe he just kind of recognized that I was passionate about it. Maybe I had some skills for it or whatever. And so he offered up this kind of retroactive scholarship of sorts, where they basically came and paid for my tuition.
Okay.
And gave me this scholarship to complete my school year. And I jumped into several more art classes, kind of did that whole thing. And
did those help?
Help with what I'm doing now? I think it's just such a different discipline. But
yeah.
It definitely helps because regardless of the output of art or creativity, doesn't matter what it is, I think it's a meditative state, at least
sure.
for me, to enter into this space where you can start to create just out of yourself, not based on what's around you, but almost closing your eyes and starting to create, whether that's music, whether that's art in any fashion, whether that's building things
or
conceiving ideas, strategies, and so on. I think they're all different types of art. So at the deepest level, I would say, it definitely helped because it connected me to that space even deeper inside.
Sure.
And that's something that's really, it's paramount for the kind of work I'm doing.
What's your favorite form of creative output right now?
That's a great question. I've got this super old house.
Because I'd seen some of that, like you guys working on that. Is that downtown?
It's downtown.
Do you live in it?
We live in it, which is not the greatest decision of my life. But it's been amazing. It's a teeny tiny old house built in the 20s.
Wow.
Sits on a good sized lot, you know, and it's under the Red Rocks, so it's beautiful. But that place has become my new canvas in my life.
Okay.
And it's about an acre in size. And so I have this canvas that's giant, and it looks like dirt. And it looks like walls, and it looks like, you know, materials and things. And we're slowly working our way through it and just trying to be thoughtful. It's interesting when you get into a small space.
Yeah.
You have to be extra thoughtful.
How many square feet is your house?
The living space is 1,400.
Okay.
So it's pretty tight. I have three kids. I'm married with three kids.
I lived in Megan and I, our house before this one. We lived in it for 5 years. It was 983 square feet.
Yeah. Yeah, we've done that.
Me and my wife, two kids and two
dogs.
That's
rough. That's rough. So we're all right. Like, it's not horrible, but it's tighter than what's comfortable, right?
Yeah.
We were in California before in a house that was larger.
Yeah.
It's hard to downsize.
Yeah.
And then to do that with renovation going, I mean.
Right, because then some of your space is unaccessible and usable.
It's always unaccessible. Yeah. There's always some space.
So what's the dream for it? Like, what's the vision?
The vision, we're on the Ironman course.
Oh, cool.
We're on the marathon course. We're right downtown, 4 blocks from Main Street. There's lots coming. I think St. George, you know.
Downtown's thriving.
It's thriving, and it's just going to grow. And so, you know, we actually have 5 lots there. We got like a flag drive.
Okay.
We got a natural spring on the property.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about
that. We have some cool opportunities that we're slowly trying to tap into in carbon.
Yeah.
This is not my world.
Yeah.
I'm very uneducated on like how to do all of this with the city and, you know, just the development. I need to talk to you.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's a huge, massive learning curve, but it's really exciting to, it's so related to my job. It's actually the exact same disciplines.
Sure.
As to what I do every day for my work.
Yeah.
It's just the output looks different.
Yeah.
You know, it's a home instead of a brand.
Right.
But the disciplines are the same.
Yeah.
You know, you're designing, you're thinking, you're budgeting, you're starting to put people in place to do certain aspects of certain projects
right.
and so on. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just a different output.
So yeah, right.
I would say that's probably my new favorite medium right now.
That's so cool. So tell me then, so you went to school and you were doing that. Like what was your evolution to being in the space that you are now as like a co-founder?
With Bondier.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, you guys are a major brand agency. I mean, you guys have done incredible projects. I mean,
thank you though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a journey, man. And it started back in 2007. I met my current business partner then. Who's Glenn Price.
Yeah.
You know Glenn well. Jumped out of New York City to St. George. And I just so happened
What's
to
funny is I see some of Glenn in you now, right?
Because
you guys have worked so long together. It's like some of the things you've done and said and just some of your mannerisms, it's like that's totally got Glenn's stamp on it. That's a compliment.
That is a compliment. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, Glenn is amazing.
He's brilliant.
Brilliant guy, fun. And, you know, we got our first project under our belt together in, I want to say, 2009. I wrapped him into something I was working on.
Yeah.
He and Ben, who also is a partner at Bondier, a major player there. You know, we kicked things off way back then. I moved to California in 2011 and was doing my own thing. And ultimately, Ben and Glenn, they cover sort of one very specific discipline of brand.
Yeah.
And that's like what we call its core identity. It's beneath the surface. It's not the visible, tangible aspect of the brand.
It's what you think felt. And feel. Yeah.
Yeah. It's what's felt, not what's seen or touched or heard. And it's really abstract. And truthfully, we've been in R&D mode for a decade. I feel like we finally are nailing everything down in meaningful ways. But, you know, ultimately, I was down in California. I was designing.
What were you designing at the time?
So my wife and I moved in 2011. We didn't know anyone. I didn't have any jobs lined up. There was nothing. We just moved because we wanted to get out of St. George. We wanted to experience something new.
Sure.
There was lots of other reasons. But but ultimately, we landed in Encinitas. And we just kind of put our head down and did what we could. I started kind of hitting the pavement, meeting people.
With the intention of working in design or
with
like
the intention of designing. I was in design at this point.
Design what?
I mean what I'm doing right now.
Okay.
It was brand focused, but in those early days, I was open to it all.
Okay.
I was illustrating. I was working with a company out of Newport that just specifically focuses on data visualization. So I was designing data visualizations.
Okay, so they're taking like a spreadsheet and saying, here's all this data. We need it to be compelling
visually.
More
than a spreadsheet, it was marketing for companies based on data points.
Okay, gotcha.
And it was taking that and illustrating that and making it visual and connective in a meaningful way. So delivering what could be mundane data in unique, visual, creative, connective, meaningful ways. So I did that for a while. I was freelancing with a client here in St. George still, that I had helped build their whole brand from the ground up. I was doing illustration work. I was doing web work. I worked with a company in Encinitas called Rain Optics, Rain Sunglasses, R-A-E-N.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Helped them do their first line of soft goods and their first catalog. You know, I was doing all this stuff. It kind of got dicey right in the early days. It was crazy. We moved there and within 6 months or so, all of my work dried up.
Oh, shit.
And I was,
6 months.
You know, I was like, dude.
Oh, no.
I'm like, okay, we were paying $700 for our mortgage in St. George.
The good old days.
We moved to California and our rent was $2,100.
Yeah.
No job.
Right.
Knew nobody. We saved up some money.
No kids at the time.
This was 2011. And so we were like, holy shit, what? like, what did we do?
Yeah.
We just tripled our cost of living.
Right.
We don't have a plan.
Yeah.
You know, so we just put our head down. My wife, she gets all of the credit because she's an esthetician. She started a little studio effort there that just blew up for
really
fast. And that allowed me to kind of figure my...
So you didn't have the pressure of like, let me go find this.
I mean, it was pressure in early days, but she picked it up. So it's funny, actually. So at the beginning of 2012, she hadn't started making money. All of what I was doing had dried up. And I remember specifically one day we were laying on our bed together and we had $500 in our bank account. And we had a $2,100 rent payment coming up. And I was like, dude, I think my wife was crying. I think she was crying. It's like, we're going to have to move home. Like, what are we doing?
How old are you at the time?
25.
Okay.
So, 24, 25, something like that. We were just like, it was that kind of scenario.
Yeah.
It was really real. I was working as much as I could in a day. I was building my own portfolio. I was making up work. I started doing some illustration work. I remember I did like this illustrative piece of a Creedence Clearwater Revival album cover that I kind of interpreted of my own that kind of like gained some traction.
Okay.
These were early days of Instagram. People weren't using Instagram for art. I was creating art and I actually started building a following.
Wow.
I got up to like 7,000 followers
in
2011. And then I had no money. I had no job. I had no prospects. And I had a friend of mine who was a creative director at DC Shoes reach out. And they offered me a job. So I took this job at Quiksilver DC Shoes.
Wow.
But it was up in Long Beach, right? Like just the last exit of Orange County before you get to Long Beach.
And
I'm living in North County, San Diego.
Right.
So I took the job because I really needed it. And I was commuting an hour and a half each way.
How far apart was this from like the $500 crying on the bed to the job offer?
Probably within... A month.
A month.
Probably in that month.
And I think, and I want to just go back to this and then we'll jump on the story for the DC Shoes because I think people need to hear it. So how did you handle that in the moment? Like, what did that conversation look like?
I'm trying to remember. All I remember was feeling like a lot of despair. And then, you know, I think it was a matter of really trusting that we could make things work.
Yeah.
And I started reaching out to whoever I could, past people I'd worked with, others. And I think we scraped together a little bit of money to make it. And then I got that job at DC, like within a few weeks. It's very quick.
I heard a quote the other day. It said like, yesterday was spent worrying about today, but today is the yesterday that you were worrying about. Right. And so it's like, it's so easy to think like in like right now today, or you and your wife back on that bed, like, how are we going to make it to tomorrow?
Totally.
But that day you were living when was once the yesterday and you're in the tomorrow. Right. And so it's like, you just got to go one day at a time. And I think it's a great story to share because I think when you're in it, like at that moment, the two of you probably felt like we're the only people who can't figure this out. Who left St. George, like, how are we failures? You know, and you label yourself all these things, and yet then you can see what can be accomplished. And I think even though that seems so difficult and challenging, like what a great story it is to now look back on.
Yeah.
And it makes the story so much more interesting.
It works out. I mean, it's so crazy. I had this amazing experience recently as a side note. I've been doing a lot of therapy for myself.
Okay.
Because I need to. I've been doing...
Like traditional therapy? Like going
No. Psychotherapy, actually.
Oh, so I asked.
I've been using plant medicine to help.
Okay.
Doing lots of forms of meditation, yoga. I'm very deep into yoga. Doing a lot of the things that people are picking up on, like cold therapy, breath.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that. But I had this amazing experience recently. And in that experience, I kind of had this dreamlike vision, right? This kind of like this visual in my mind. And I was in this dark space. It was like this misty dark space. And I was being pushed forward. Like I couldn't not walk forward.
Yeah.
And it was really like this inarguable force.
Okay.
Just kind of pushing
propelling
me.
Propelling you
I think
forward.
It's like time, right?
Okay.
Maybe is the analogy.
It's love
like,
it.
It's like time's pushing me forward no matter what I'm doing. I'm always having to take that next step forward.
Yeah.
It's not a choice that's going to happen.
Correct.
And it was so terrifying because it's dark and I can't see. And even down in front of my foot, there was nothing that I was going to step on in this dream.
Sure.
But my foot's going forward.
The uncertainty of the future.
My foot's going forward. And every time as it goes forward, a stone appears and it lands under my foot and then my foot lands on it. And then the next leg's going forward. No stone. Boom. Right when I'm landing, stone's there. I look forward, there's nothing ahead of me. But I turn and I look behind me, and there was a pathway of stones off into that dark mist.
What a great story.
And it was unreal. It's actually changed my life a lot because I've learned that, kind of building off what you're saying, I've had a fear that my future is not going to work out for some reason.
Right? Yeah, where do you think that comes from?
I can get into it. There's like, a lot.
Let's do, please do. This is great.
It's very personal stuff.
If you can go there, I think it's so interesting.
No, it's powerful for me. I'm on this big journey of trying to overcome those things that are holding me back that I haven't been aware of in my life. And I think it's really easy to not be aware of the things that surround you or hold you.
Well, don't you think that most of the people in existence today are unaware of all of that, right?
Yes.
Society
we're operating on default.
Right.
Mode.
Society puts us in our subconscious mind, just runs everything we do, and we're just like, we do the things we know we're supposed to do, get up, eat.
That's right. Work, yeah. It's so go easy to, sleep, to right? just be on cruise control.
So how often do people actually take a moment to grab hold of their life and be, you know, and have an understanding of like what they're actually doing and why they're, maybe even why they're doing
you
it.
You should write this down. One of my favorite pieces of, I'll call it literature, is from David Foster Wallace. It's a commencement speech that he gave. And it's, you could look on YouTube, just, it's, this is water, David Foster Wallace.
This is water.
You should check it out. It's just a quick little bit.
I'll just add that to the show notes of this podcast too, so people want to watch it.
Yeah, it's so powerful. It's actually been a real big game changer for me. And he's talking to these graduates of this university. And he's basically just telling them that their degree doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean shit if they don't first understand that awareness is true knowledge. That's the first step to everything, is to simply be aware. And you just got to listen to it because he delivers it really beautifully. And I think that's it, right? It's being aware.
Yeah.
Being aware of what surrounds you and what is happening within you.
Was there a catalyst that created this journey or the start of the awareness of these things that were maybe an obstacle for you? Like, how did you get to that place that you're at now? What was the thing?
Yeah. So I'm reluctant to go too personal here, but I'll offer this up because I think it is helpful. And I've had a hard time in my life speaking about it.
Yeah.
Which has, in essence, held me back.
Sure.
So that's why I'm going to talk about it, because it's really personal. But when I was 11, my family was going on vacation with my best friend, actually my Yoda, my design Yoda's family.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the vehicle with them. The rest of my family was in the vehicle, my family's vehicle in front.
Yeah.
And they got in a car accident and took my dad and my brother.
Oh my
their
God.
Life, and my mom almost passed too. She was not supposed to make it, so she was in a coma for a while.
And did you see it?
And I watched the whole thing.
Oh, my
and
God.
I was 11, right? And everybody else was in that, but me. So I kind of was there alone. So that.
Oh man,
I won't go too much beyond that, right? There's so much that's the very surface level, side of it.
Oh man, it made my skin.
It gets quite gnarly when I unpack it, and I didn't ever give that any weight in my life. I think I just tried to avoid it mostly.
Yeah.
Because it felt like I'm seeking pity or sympathy whenever I spoke about it, or it just straight up felt like a lie coming out of my mouth. Because it was pretty, now I can see 25 years later.
Was that just
26 years
later. So was your remaining family then just your mom and you?
So my mom, my sister, they were both in the car accident.
Okay.
And they both survived. And then my brother, who was out of the country at the time, he's older.
Okay.
Right. So there's still, there's us four.
Yeah.
But it's a big thing, right?
There's so many other
tragic things that happened to this 11-year-old.
Yeah.
That I'm like really.
Well, and then you're faced with like, am I supposed to be in that car? And just like, the amount of things where your mind could run at that age, especially.
Yeah. To the point, I think it just shut me down, truthfully, for like 2 decades.
Wow.
To where I just closed off to. I probably in my 20s, I didn't even speak about it at all for my whole, like a whole decade. Like it's just, I ran away from it. I moved to California, set up a new life, right?
Yeah.
That to answer your question is the catalyst to this kind of like, I will call it evolution within myself, this growth and this change is coming back to St. George in 2021.
Because then it kind of forced you to sit with it?
Look, I thought I had addressed it. I thought I'd work past that. I was fine. I'm a happy person.
Yeah.
I really am. And I always have been. I'm not this person that just sits and wallows in misery. I love life. I love to live life. And that's exactly what I've been doing.
Yeah.
Right? I've been living. And I was in California surfing every day and having a blast.
Well, you got a big energy too, right? You bring that with you.
Yeah, I guess. I don't want to be held back, but ultimately, going back to awareness, I didn't actually realize that just because I didn't entertain this stuff, just because I didn't want to address it or I wasn't thinking about it, doesn't mean it wasn't sitting there festering.
Yeah.
So I returned to St. George in 2021, and everything was just right in my face.
Wow.
It was gnarly. Like, we actually moved back. We were building a home, and so we were staying at my mom's for a couple months. The house that I went through all of that in.
Oh, wow.
And you
got your kids with you now too.
I have my kids and my wife, and it's all good. But ultimately, you know, we were like staying upstairs where I existed in all of this. This is when I connected to art. It was after.
Yeah.
I became an insomniac. I couldn't sleep when I was 11, 12, 13, 14 and on. So that's how I found art. That's really when it really sunk in.
That was like an outlet for you to disengage from reality.
It was the outlet.
Yeah.
It was the one thing. It was music and it was art. I play the piano and I got into some other instruments and I just love music. It's actually my like number one choice of expression.
Music.
Is music.
Even today.
But I don't.
Do you write music or do you?
I do. You do? Okay. I just kind of riff when I play it on the piano. I haven't formally written it down.
Okay.
Much, you know, but it's just such a pure like expression of the soul for me and art. And I was up every night when I was this young kid drawing and listening to music, creating art. And it's just like, I've revisited some of those drawings and paintings and such, and they're painful. It's actually kind of crazy to revisit it as an adult and be like, wow, there's a lot, like it tells a lot here.
Yeah.
So anyways, we come back 2021, I'm 36 at the time. And so it's been 25 years, right? You think you move on from stuff.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm like, holy shit.
Heavy.
That along with a lot of other things in our current day life at that point in time, just didn't go right. They didn't go according to plan. My wife had a miscarriage right after we moved back. That was the second one and it was really gnarly.
Man.
She rushed to the hospital in an ambulance and, you know, like life-threatening scenarios. I got injured. I broke my arm. I tore my shoulder on a mountain bike ride because I was pissed at a client who was threatening to sue me.
So you're doing like an angry ride.
I was on an angry ride. Yeah. And there's just like thing after thing, the house we were building. We got caught up in the storm of 2021.
Yeah. Yep.
When materials shot up 3,000%.
Yeah, they raised my house price $100,000 while under contract.
Yeah.
And it was like, wait, what?
Right. I was about to go vertical. We did all of the groundwork.
Yeah.
We're about to go vertical, get a construction loan out, and the price had doubled on me in the time that we did that dirt work. And I'm like, I'm not marrying a house. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, but it was so gnarly because we had already gone through that whole process.
Oh my gosh.
Of designing and building a home. We were ready to go and get it finished. So it's like we did all the work and we didn't get, and you know how painful building a house is.
Oh,
it sucks.
Yeah.
And so anyways, there's just all of these things. And then I'm back in this environment where these demons are just all around me all the time. And I actually found myself in a place where I wasn't wanting to live. You know, I was like, this is too gnarly. I felt like my whole being was going to explode.
So I'm going to get emotional. I got to share with you. I was telling my friends, I said, so I'm only 25 episodes in. That's not a lot of episodes. Okay.
Right. Right.
And I said one of the most common themes so far, and I've only had one female on the podcast so far.
Okay.
That's just the way it shook out. Is how many of my guests have brought up suicide.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, it's not my intention.
In recent years?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not my intention. I didn't know this, right?
Well, yeah, you don't broadcast.
You know, so it's like, and yet it keeps getting brought up. I mean, that's probably, it's been brought up in maybe four of the last six podcasts.
So wild, man.
And I'm like, that is, it's one, so scary. And it's two, almost more scary that until I sat down with someone for 60 minutes and had a conversation, I never knew.
Yeah.
So you have these relationships with people and you don't know because, you know, there's all those reasons why you wouldn't talk about it. But it's like, man, how can we help? Because now I just know. Now I know the people listening, like who's ever listening right now.
Yeah.
There's a good chance that a high percentage of them are experiencing that. So when you brought that up to me, it's like I got flooded with emotion because it's just like, I can't believe. So what do we do? How do we like what? And I guess you're going to share some of that. So let's just go back on it.
And look, I have so much respect and reverence for the topic. It's hard for me to accept that I actually have had those feelings in my life. And I feel some imposter syndrome for some strange reason in this world of pain and sadness, which is so crazy because I've been acutely aware of it.
Do you mean almost like that you, like your pain isn't enough or something?
Like,
is that
what you're saying? I think I compare it. I know I have a good life. I know I'm fortunate. And I know so many people have it so much worse.
I get what you're saying. So your life is so good. You almost feel guilty for having those thoughts because there's people who suffer.
Right.
But I think what's important about that message is that everyone's pain is real.
It's pain. Someone told me something that really helped me. They said something to the effect, it doesn't matter if I'm drowning in 15 feet of water and you're drowning in 6 feet of water. We're both drowning.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's a good way to think about it. Like, don't diminish your life, you know, in comparison to other. Comparison is a waste of time.
And you can get so caught up in that. And so I think I didn't mean to stop the train of thought. I really needed to share that because
I love that. Thank you.
I think it's so important, and I'm so glad you're sharing it because, you know, what you did for you, maybe there's someone listening who's like, I want to try that. So let's just get back on that path. Amy is your wife?
Amy is my wife.
Amy's your wife. So she has her miscarriage. That takes you get that client. Threatens to sue you. Just so everything built on top of each other takes you to that dark space. And so how did you, what was the thing that propelled you out of it? Was there like one moment where you were like,
yeah, I mean, you know, I started journaling in 2019, right at the end of 2019.
And how do you journal? When you say journal, how do you do it?
I have this app I use at work called Notion.
Okay.
I use it for everything. Okay. And shout out to Notion.
Shout out Notion.
You should check it out, dude. It's an app that does
everything. Never heard of it.
Yeah, you should Notion. Check it out. It's a tool that is multifaceted, and you can get it to work for you however you want. I use it to run my business, from project management to scheduling to delivery to clients to internal brainstorming, writing an organization, so on and so on. So blah, blah. And then I have a section of Notion that's private for me. And that's where I do a lot of my life stuff. I do trip planning for our family there.
Okay.
I have like a journal called Conscious Thinking that's just like existential thought type stuff.
Okay.
And then I have my not daily journal. I use my phone calendar a lot to help prompt myself to do things.
Yeah.
So every 2 weeks, Sunday night at 10 p.m., I get a calendar notification that says, write in your journal, you regret it later in life if you don't.
I love that.
So that's all it says. And so every 2 weeks is kind of my cadence.
So you're doing like a dump of the last 2 weeks.
Not even. Sometimes I don't do it every 2 weeks, and I'll do a dump of like 3 months.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a short blurb of a conversation I had with my daughter that day or my friend. And or I'll just like screenshot text messages I use it in whatever way. I don't give myself too much rigidity when it comes to journaling.
You just let it flow.
I let it flow.
You're too creative to have all that rigidity anyways, right?
I couldn't do it. Like in the moment, what's in my mind? How am I feeling? And I think about it as though it's coming from me to my children later in life or whoever. Or
absolutely.
Whoever's going to come across this, I want them to get the inside track a little bit.
Sure.
And I started journaling, and that in itself was a massive form of therapy. I went to a traditional therapist for the first time in my life in the beginning of 2021, like probably January.
Because of all those thoughts you were having, is that what got you in the room?
Yeah, so I started journaling, and I read back a journal entry that I wrote down in August of 2021. August of 2021, I read this journal entry and I was like, holy shit, dude, you were having suicidal thoughts at that time. Like I had 3 days where I couldn't be alone. My wife had to be with me
like your conscious self didn't even know?
No, had no clue. It was revisiting those words and being like, whoa, dude, like,
wow.
My kids and my wife do not deserve that. They don't deserve me having those thoughts and feelings and acting out of that place. That's not my best self.
So once you had that conscious realization, did you then share it with Amy?
So I share it. We actually read it to her and we were just crying. And I'm like, I've got to do something.
Yeah.
You know, I went to a therapist she recommended. And that was the first time I heard myself say my own story out loud.
Wow.
The therapist was just asking me about myself and he's doing the therapist thing where they ask specific digging questions.
Isn't that interesting? So if we did this podcast 2 years ago, it would have been completely different.
Totally different. I wouldn't have addressed any of this.
Yeah. No. Wow.
Yeah. No, I heard it out loud and I'm like, whoa, this is actually my story.
Yeah.
It's not fake.
Yeah.
Like I'm not making this up. I'm just telling him because he's asking me specific questions. I'm answering them and I'm like, yikes, you know? Anyways, I went back one more time to him and it didn't have the same effect. And I'm like, I think that's all I needed.
You just had to get it out loud. I had to speak vocalize that out loud.
But then my wife recommended this little weekend retreat thing. And it was like yoga and breath work.
Had you done any of that stuff at that time?
No, I thought yoga was stupid.
So were you against it?
I was so against it. I'm like, no, dude, it's like $2,000 to go do this thing or something. Like, and I don't want to go do yoga with a bunch of people I don't know.
And oh, like, yeah. And like have to hug each other and tell you like, love each other.
And,
yeah.
And I'm like, no.
That's a tough thing.
And she looked at me. She's like, Tav, I've had a hell of a year too. And I need this. And I think you need this more than you realize it.
Isn't it incredible to have a partner like that?
You know? Dude, she's the best, man. She is the best partner I could ever ask for. And it just hit me between the eyes. I was like, I mean, how do you argue with that?
Number one, you don't.
Like that's straight up truth right there. I trust her. She's my life partner. We've been through everything with. And
how long have you guys been together?
Dude, we celebrate our 15-year anniversary next week.
Congratulations. Thanks, amazing.
Kate, I appreciate it. I feel too young for that.
I know. Well, I've been dating Megan for 17 years. So probably similar to you then too, right?
Yeah, something about that. Yeah. So we went to this retreat. It was the first time I've ever done breath work. First time I ever gotten a cold plunge. First time I've ever done any form of meditation.
Yeah.
Or anything of the sort.
That's actually surprising just given the creative spirit that you have.
Yeah.
If there was someone to be interested
into
in that,
yeah.
It seems like it would have been you. Where did you go for the retreat?
It was just out, what do they call it? What's that new golf course out in Hurricane? The nice.
Sand Hollow?
No. Further.
Oh, Copper Rock.
Copper Rock. So it was out there.
Okay.
It's really cool. Beautiful event. It was unreal. I had some experiences there that actually just totally changed. It was the impetus of opening me up to myself.
Yeah.
It helped me. Recognize there was one experience in particular that helped me connect to the tools that I have within me to resolve my own inability to let go of things that were holding me back.
Does that make sense? No, I do actually. I love that you shared that because I believe, and I think it's so important for people listening to know that whatever we create, we can fix. Because like our body created it, so certainly our body can correct it, right?
And dude, that was the beginning of a journey that I would never, ever have expected in a million years. The last 2 years, so that was... We're in 2023, end of 2023.
Yeah.
So that was right at the beginning of 2022, I believe.
Okay. So you're like 18 months in.
February. Yeah. So I'm like a year and a half into absolutely being in love with things like yoga. I mean, I do yoga daily now. I have a daily yoga practice. We go to classes a few times a week.
Do you do the cold plunge still?
Yeah. Yeah. I need to do it more.
I want to do that. I just hate the cold so much.
I know. It sucks. It never gets easy. But honestly, it's pretty nuts. There's so much to talk about here that I talk too much. I feel like a lot of times.
I know. This is wonderful.
Bounce all over. But I've started now a year and a half in. I've gone through a lot of journeying and going deep and starting to kind of piece apart just my life, my inner workings, who I am and how I exist and how I show up in the world and how I feel and just getting really, really tapped in.
Yeah.
And ultimately getting healthy through it all. It began as a mental health journey that quickly turned into a physical health journey.
Yeah, because total health, you have to have both.
They're inextricably connected.
Yeah, like even if you were absolutely just shredded fit, but you were sick mentally, you're not healthy.
No. Yeah, and I have my own opinions on health, and I'm not saying they're universal, but I mean, I think true health starts in the gut.
Yeah. Did the cleanse.
Oh, yeah.
So did I. Yeah.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
The greatest,
life-changing.
You know McCray Hepler?
Uh-huh.
Of course, he's the unofficial mayor of St. George.
Mayor.
His episode comes out next Wednesday.
Nice.
But he just started his yesterday.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, because I tell everyone about it because it's like, I think it's so incredibly important. It's
massive.
And I think that it's funny. I was telling my friends about it. And I said, well, I think there's two things. Like, there's parasites that live in you that are there for fuel, right? But I think there's also trauma parasites.
Surely.
Who are living off the trauma because we're all just energy, yeah. Right? And so if they thrive in a negative space, then I believe that, you know, they're inside of us. So I believe they're sending out a frequency of what they need, whether that's like a craving for junk food or like I need something salty or I need something sweet or like I just want to be pissed. Like I think when you've got something that's inside your body, it's like trying to take you over, like of course that's going to impact you.
Yeah.
And he goes, you lost me when you said that there's like trauma parasites. Yeah. I said, well, look, I don't know.
No, it's all weird, dude. At the end of the day, I acknowledge.
Yeah.
Look, I acknowledge the weirdness of there's, all
but
of this
there world. Are aliens living inside of us. I mean, that's what those parasites are.
Shit, dude, I saw them.
I know. Yours were crazy.
I can't deny it.
No.
No. I like literally, and everybody that's done this now,
yeah,
they see that.
Yeah.
It's undeniable. So it's anyways, I don't like to get too pushy with some form of like way of living.
I just think it's important to share because everyone gets to decide if it's good for them or not. And and I think that, you know, you don't know until you know. And so if someone else was struggling with things like you and they thought, you know what, maybe I should do that retreat that I didn't want to
something.
Do.
I mean, look, my wife and I kind of practice life holistically somewhat. We try to be healthy naturally, and things like that.
What's your guy's diet like
now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's perfect, but man, since doing this this 10-day detox, parasite and heavy metals detox, that's what we're talking about, where you're just eating organic fruit, drinking distilled water. There's a couple like,
did you do any of the soups?
Yeah.
They're good.
So good.
Dude, that's especially like, when you haven't eaten, you're
continues
like...
Continues to be my diet, mostly.
Yeah, really?
Like, truthfully, like, I mean, I live off fruit smoothies most of the time because I love it. I don't. It's not because I'm trying that hard.
Yeah.
I had an In-N-Out burger last week when we were in California, driving home. We had to get something quick. I felt like hell from it.
I know.
Like, I can't do that anymore. It's not because I don't want to. It tastes so good. It hurts.
You know what I learned is that so doing the cleanse, so much of my cravings were emotional, and that's it. It wasn't like I'm hungry, I want to have ice cream. It's like
I need comfort.
Yes, food gives me happiness, and like there's certain foods like a chicken noodle soup where it's like that's tied to so many positive emotions that like I'm just eating happiness.
Absolutely,
and like I could just eat and eat and eat. Absolutely. And so it was really interesting. So I love to test things.
Same.
So I'm getting ready to do the cleanse again on October 1st. I want to do it every quarter.
Sweet.
Because I feel like you just got to keep.
I agree. Yeah. I'm about ready to do it.
Keep working on it. So I'm doing that. I just got my blood drawn. I don't go to the doctor ever, like ever in my life.
Yes.
I just don't do it. But I was like, okay, I'm going to try the carnivore diet.
Nice.
So we bought half a cow, like grass-fed, never interacted with humans, like just living its happy life. Right. And so I was like, well, I want to have some tangible information as to like what was the outcome of this.
Totally.
So I got my blood drawn on Monday.
Okay.
And then I'll do my 10-day cleanse. I'm going to do carnivore for 90 days, get my blood drawn
again. Oh, you're
going
deep, bro.
Yeah. Well, because our chiropractor was like, if you really want to see, he's like, so there's going to be good things that will happen in 30 days. And he's like, and good things will happen because you're just not having processed foods.
Of course.
So just like if you just ate vegetables for 90 days, you'd also have positive things because you're taking out all the shit that exists in our food system.
Yeah.
But he said, if you really want to know, if you really want to see change, try it for 90 days and let's see what happens. And so I don't know what's going to happen. Like
Could I ask who your chiropractor is?
I don't know. Yeah, actually I do. It's in my emails.
It's not Vredenburg, is it?
Nope. His name is Dr. Gibson, I believe. Gibson.
Okay, I think I've heard that name.
All homeopathic, really cool. He was actually, Dr. Gibson is his name. Shout out Dr. Gibson. He was actually the San Antonio Spurs chiropractor.
Cool.
And has done a bunch of stuff over in... like Japan, and has published a bunch of books over there, all homeopathic. And like, even when he took my blood, I was like thought he's going to have to hook up to a machine. He just like pricked my finger. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I thought you'd have to do a whole thing. He goes, well, hospitals still do it that way because then they can bill you $3,000 for each of these processes.
Right.
But he's like, realistically, it's $100 for me to run your blood.
So funny.
So it'll be interesting to see. So
dude,
stay tuned.
Let
listeners.
Me know.
Yeah.
I'm so down for going deep now like that.
Just right.
Really going all the way and seeing the results.
Yeah. I want to see how my brain feels. How do I think? How do I feel? How do I sleep? And then I'll also have the actual like bio data. Does my testosterone go up or down? Does my cholesterol go up or down? What happens to my weight? So I'm really curious to see.
I don't think a report.
Yeah, there's nothing I'll do forever, but there's certainly things I'll do for 90 days. Another interesting biohack I just tried. Have you seen like people who tape their mouth shut?
Oh yeah.
So I met when I spoke at an event in Columbus. I can't remember if it was a week or 2 weeks ago, and the CEO of Hostage Tape was one of the speakers. And he
is
gave
that the brand.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's called Hostage Tape. And he gave out the tape. And so me being willing to try.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought it'd be scary, like to tape your mouth closed. It actually is very comforting.
Wow.
And I've slept better than I've ever slept.
Oh, so it's just for sleeping.
I mean, you can do it for other things. Like it's when you breathe in your mouth, you're not supposed
to.
Because right, that's
a disease. I'm a nose breather when I sleep. I don't have an issue.
That's what my wife said. And I said, I got pictures.
Oh, really?
Like she thinks she's a nose breather.
Maybe you should have some pictures.
But she sleeps with her mouth wide open. Like when she's exhausted, it's like that, you know?
Cool. Yeah.
And so I can say that after doing it now for a week or 2 weeks, I do have a different level of rest and rejuvenation when I wake up.
That's
so
cool.
Been really interesting.
Hey, that's, I need to check that out. Cause sleep is paramount. I have lots of changes in my life. Like I said, I was an insomniac.
So has this therapy helped you find
that
comfort
helped
and sleep?
A lot. Plant medicine helps me a lot with sleep. I've slept well since 2019. I broke my back in 2019, and that's I started using cannabis for it. Pain,
because
I did some opioids, like some whatever, you know, like painkiller stuff.
Yeah,
I can't do that. It's the worst.
Thing. It is the worst. Yeah,
it just makes
it's dangerous
me,
too.
Makes me feel horrible. Yeah, it's dangerous.
Thank goodness you didn't like the way it made you feel.
No, I've never really liked the pill thing. So,
yeah.
You know, but that I found like relief from pain and also just incredibly better sleep.
Yeah.
And that's continued. But yeah, you know, and then just getting healthy. I'm not perfect with it. With my diet, I try to just pay attention to how I feel.
I think the goal is progress, right? Because we can't be perfect.
It's not about perfection. I think it's just. My philosophy, I don't draw a lot of lines in the sand in life with anything. But at the end of the day, it's like, does this serve me in a good way or a bad way?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of simple. And when you can get really in touch with your core and with your body and how it feels or how it's feeling, your body has this intuition, especially with food. Before you even eat food and you're thinking about what you're going to eat, your body's speaking.
Yeah.
And if you can get in tune with that voice, I found that to be the best guide for my diet.
I did. Megan and I also did this other thing called Wild Fit, which we did for 90 days, which was all about learning how our prehistoric brain ate seasonally.
Yeah.
And so like to take your body through seasonal eating. So that way like
makes so much sense.
Your brain was operating with how the body was intended. And it was interesting because in teaching that, so he would like teach a course every week. And one of the things he said is like there's different forms of hunger. And we're so confused today as to like what we're hungry for.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's like you're actually just thirsty, but all your mind knows is hunger. So then you go grab chips because they're delicious.
And all you needed was a drink of water.
Yeah. And those chips make you more thirsty, which then you're still perceiving as hunger.
Yeah.
Never realizing like what I really needed was just water.
It's crazy.
And so that's been really interesting. Yeah. I do have one other question.
Yeah.
So given that you're in this holistic space now and you grew up in St. George, did you grow up in an LDS religion or
I did.
You
yeah.
did?
Mm-hmm.
And did that continue even after the passing of your family or
yeah
it did okay
yeah for sure I've always had a conflicted relationship with religion
sure
and feeling a lot of conviction for it but I would say that I was very much on cruise control through a lot of my life just default settings you know what I'm saying not specifically thinking about how I want my life to look.
You just went there because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, with that and with everything. I ate what I ate because that's just what I ate.
Yeah.
And I did what I did because that's just what I did.
Right.
Like, I don't think I was more on the ride of life rather than at the steering wheel driving it.
That's a great line.
You know, and so I don't know. When I, you know, I've always had a hard time. I, you know, through my teenage years, you can imagine how tortured I was.
Yeah.
Right. And I went to church. I was active in all of that. And
did you go on a mission?
I went on a mission, but wow. This is the thing. I was inactive, from like 17, 18, 19. I was a drug user, unfortunately. I was living a life that was pretty dark and unhappy, trying to run away from
trying to unknowing solve that trauma you didn't know you had.
Run away from this pain. And yeah, and I just when I was 19 in my I was pretty bummed on life. I was not happy. and I remember I was up in Salt Lake and I don't know. I was alone. I was at my friend's house and I was like, I don't know why, but I just want to say a prayer. I haven't prayed in as long as I'd remember that.
Yeah. Point. And when have you ever prayed on your own? Not like,
yeah. I mean, in like an actual meaningful prayer, like a prayer that was like, oh, I feel compelled to do this thing. It was like some requirement.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember just having this feeling, that was like, you're in a pretty miserable place, and that life, or like you know, this church life, where your mom's at, like, you know, your family exists and stuff, that's definitely brighter and better than where you're at.
Yeah,
right. That was it. It wasn't like truth, not truth, this and that, all of those things.
Yeah,
right?
What serves you more?
It was like, wow, I'm really unhappy, and this feels like it could be a happier way.
Yeah.
And so I came back to St. George, and I luckily had a buddy, Gary Stone, who was the chief operating officer of IHC.
Okay.
And he kind of took me under his wing. He saw that I was unhappy and that I needed some change, and I was talking to him one day and telling him about my life situation and how I was feeling.
Yeah.
And he had this idea. He's like, well, what if I helped? What if I got you a job at the hospital working night shift? Because I was talking to him about how I was stuck in this group of people that was very easy to just keep going.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to because I wasn't happy. So he's like, well, let me get you a job. It'll help solve several problems. You'll be able to save more money and it'll be an excuse.
Yeah.
So he got me a job at the hospital working the night shift, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And I was going to school at the time. I was in the art program.
Yeah.
I was restoring my truck. And I was also a cook at Pasta Factory.
Nice.
So I filled all of the hours of all of my days up.
Yeah.
And that was a way to change. That was for me a way to change. And then met some buddies that were active, and they were so friendly. And they took me under their wing, and they were buds with me. And ultimately, I ended up going on a mission as a way of staying out of that life. I didn't go on a mission with this really strong testimony that the church was true or this or that. In fact, I couldn't even teach about some of the basic principles on my mission. I'd never baptized anyone, and I was conflicted the whole time. I went to New Zealand, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. At least you got to go somewhere cool.
I got so lucky to go.
Imagine doing that in like, you know, Nebraska.
Or like a Latin America country where it's like, you know, I have friends and family. My best bud and brother-in-law went to Peru, and we talk about stories all the time, and it's just so different.
Yeah.
And luckily in New Zealand, the people are pretty laid back and chill.
Yeah.
You know, and just super accepting, and it felt really comfortable there. I went through my mission. It was super conflicted the whole time. But ultimately finding ways to do good, help people out and be kind and show the other people that the Mormons can be normal.
Yeah. Do you have a relationship with any religion now?
No. Yeah. I think my tribe will always be LDS people. That's where it came from. And I love it. I think generally speaking, they're just all good people.
Like
good people exist in churches.
I found.
And I found that in all different churches. But for me, in my late 20s, I just started feeling more detached or disconnected from it. And having kids really starts to highlight or emphasize things for me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, well, now I'm teaching a person and shaping their life for them. And that just changes things.
For sure.
To where it's like, I don't really feel good with the narrative of all of this.
Right.
And that's where the detachment started to happen.
That makes sense.
You know, and then it became so much about integrity. And I read this book recently that's so good, and I'm not a big reader. It might sound like I am because I've referenced two books now. I'm not a big reader. But this awesome book called, I can't remember now. It talks about your zone of genius.
Okay.
And I don't think that's the name of it. I can't recall anyway. But it was so cool. One part that just stuck out above everything else in that book is talking about integrity. It said integrity should not be looked at as a moral issue. Integrity should be looked at as an issue of physics.
Interesting.
You're either in integrity or you're not. You're in or you're out of integrity.
I like that.
It's so black and white. There's no gray area when it comes to integrity.
Well, and just because you're in integrity right now doesn't mean you'll be integrity tomorrow.
No, it's a daily challenge to always remain truthful to who you are. Authentic to your identity and yourself and what's real and true coming from you purely. And honestly, my business, Bondeer, that's the exact same discipline that we take organizations through.
Yeah.
Is to connect with that deepest, truest, most authentic part of yourself as an organization or as a leadership group or whatever, and to act from that place. And so my life has started to become that for my – it's like taking the discipline of my job and what we encourage for our clients and practicing it in my life. It's what do you –
You're just living. Yeah, you're just living it.
Yeah, and just be true. And like truthfully, I don't have any qualms with anyone else's approach to life. I don't think I've got it figured out.
Yeah.
And I don't think my way is better than anyone else's. In fact, I would be a little bit worried if someone tried to take my same path. Truthfully, because it's like not like it's easy.
Yeah, right.
And it's not going to solve everything.
Yeah.
It's not solving everything for me.
Yeah.
It's a daily solving.
Yeah.
But I think that acting out of a place of integrity has served me really well. And I'm really trying to do that always.
I love that. Just to be real.
Yeah. Just to be real. It's like I'm not posturing.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be something I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not disguising words or like saying shit that's not real.
Yeah.
Just to look cool.
Yeah.
Or fit in.
Right.
I'm fine to disagree with someone. If they like something and they ask my opinion and it's opposite, I'll just say, I'm not going to just say I like it.
Yeah.
Just because you like it.
I think that's something that we need more of, like nationally, right? People to be comfortable just saying what they feel and for it to not be an attack on you. If you say something I don't agree with, doesn't mean I'm attacking you.
I hope it's not. I mean, I think there's ways to deliver things where it can feel attacking.
Absolutely.
Or very disarming. And ultimately, I like to approach conversations in a disarming way and find common ground with people. Rather than highlight our differences and where we differ.
Yeah, there's more that we have in common collectively as people than we don't.
We're all living this human experience.
So I do have a question for you to go back to Bondeer. You just kind of brought that up and I was curious, like what is the funnest project you've ever worked on for Bondeer?
Bondeer itself.
Really?
Oh, it's so fun. I mean, it's the most challenging damn thing I've ever done to build a business. Yeah,
to work with a bunch of creative people would be challenging.
Yeah. It's tough to run a business in the creative space.
Yeah.
Those two things are opposites. Creativity, brand, all of these things are so squishy.
Right.
And spreadsheets don't like squishy.
Yeah.
So to find a way to operate a successful business in this squishy world, it's tough. It's so fun. And in terms of projects I've had to work on, they're all fun. I'm always in a... I am always in competition with myself with every project.
Sure.
And I almost don't really care what the brand or the type of company is I'm working for. It could be a dentist office or it could be an aerospace company.
Right.
Or it could be Nike or Vans, Quiksilver stuff. It could be, you know, a cool action sports company and so on. It could be all of these. I've had so many cool opportunities.
Yeah.
I really am lucky. Like I got to rebrand the World Surf League, which is like the NBA or the NFL for the world of surfing.
Yeah. That's so
probably
cool.
The most globally recognized entity that I've been able to craft. And to like get off an airplane in Australia in 2016 and see a whole wall that's branded by the WSL, and I did that.
That's amazing. Was like, whoa. And you're a surfer, so it's like it's melding all these passions together.
I think that
together.
One's fun, other than the fact that in the actual world of core surfing, the WSL is highly contested as something that's maybe an
a negative.
Evil or a force for good. And so it's like, you know, but yeah, that was really fun.
Well, because I was going to ask, what project are you most proud of? But maybe that's the answer.
I wouldn't say that. No, most proud of. I'm really proud of the work that's been coming out of my studio in the last 2 years. We've done work for Intergalactic.
Yeah, I was going to say Intergalactic stuff is so incredible.
And the thing that makes it meaningful is not what I did. It's what they have been doing since.
Sure.
With it. They and Tractor Beverage Company is another client of mine. That you can go get Tractor at Chipotle.
Yeah, right.
We helped them make that happen.
I remember you guys taking shots of their drinks like in Glenn's
barn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, Tractor was an amazing, that's probably the pinnacle of favorite projects, I would say, is Tractor, because it was a very dense relationship. It lasted for 3 years.
Yeah.
We got into every part of it. I sat at the table with the CEO of Tractor and pitched Tractor to the C-suite of Chipotle.
Wow.
I went to to Dallas and pitched Tractor to 7-Eleven, to the CEO of 7-Eleven.
That's
and
so built a cool. Relationship.
Like, I was on the ground with them doing those things and having those meaningful conversations, and then to see them understand their identity in such a meaningful way and to act out of that place always, and then to find these other brand partnerships, these successful partnerships that catapulted these guys.
Yeah.
All because they leaned into that identity. That's literally why Chipotle took Tractor. It wasn't just because they had an amazing product.
Yeah.
It's because their identity resonated with Chipotle's identity.
Right.
That's why. And that just means, I mean, that means so much to me. And to take a company from, you know, a $10 million company to now they're like a $600 million plus going up is so cool to see that because of those efforts. And you know, it's awesome.
I love what you guys are doing for St. George too, because you're showing that like major accomplishments can happen out of here.
For sure.
You
know well, what I mean? And like, I mean, I
working
hope.
With big organizations. And I mean, like Intergalactic, they're like a piece of their equipment is like on everything in space or in sky.
Exactly.
Right?
I know.
And that's happening here,
and
which is so
cool. They're
doing
amazing things. There's so much cool stuff. And I, you know, St. George has some dynamics that are tough. Ultimately, they're the dynamics that led me to leave in 2011.
Yeah.
And now I'm back. It's a different place.
Yeah.
But what I'm hoping with Bondier and with existing here in St. George is just that, is to show people that great things can happen and come out of St. George. And ultimately, I believe all ships rise in high tide.
Yeah.
And I want to help fill the pool up.
That's awesome.
I want to rise that tide. I want to help people just see themselves as better than maybe they see themselves and understand that it's good to invest in that transformation of self.
Absolutely.
Right? And to act out of it. So that's the...
Okay, so then I got a brainstorming question for you.
Okay, what's up?
Okay, so I've got my book, Winning the Moment.
Yeah.
And so I never had social media before the book came out. I just didn't love it, but it was like, okay, I got to be here because that's where the eyeballs are and opportunities.
Right.
And I want to be able to take that message and share it with a larger audience, and I want to be able to speak and do all of these things. And so Winning the Moment is a thing, but then I'm also me. So I'm Cody Aden, who wrote Winning the Moment.
Yeah.
Right? The podcast is called Winning the Moment, but I'm also Cody Aden, who is the CFO and president of Vibrant Management, which is also a different entity.
Totally.
Which
You're
is still
split
me.
All over.
And so the question is, from a branding perspective, do you have direction for me on should Cody Aden be a brand, or should this just be the brand? Like, I'm so perplexed on how do I move that forward in the most effective way.
Right. I mean, I think you are a brand.
Yeah.
I think everybody is, but I think you definitely are, of all people. You're building a name for yourself and an identity around who you are. And it looks a lot like a leader in business.
Yeah.
You know, an ideas person that's trying to push people forward as well and propel them forward. To me, that feels real. It feels authentic. I think you lean into that. And I think these are offerings from that entity.
Okay, so Cody Aden's here, and then there's these other things beneath me that are part of what I do, but hone into that as, and like that's all my social stuff is like Cody Aden, right? Like LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. But it was really, I didn't know what to do.
No, that's tough.
Right?
I mean, look, I don't think there's a science to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's unique for every single person, every single entity I've ever worked with. we have frameworks, we have methods of doing what we do, but the outcome's always different. And yeah. because every person, every group has different needs, and they come from different places with different histories and different perspectives. And I think it's taking what's real, what's good, what's meaningful, what's unique. You know, it's got to be novel and it's got to be useful. That's what creativity is. And I think taking those things forward is going to serve you best.
I love that. Now, even as you say that, I'm thinking it's like, well, someone's going to hire me to speak. They're not hiring Winning the Moment. They're hiring Cody Aden. Totally. And if I am Cody Aden, I can speak about more than just that. Of course, that's a platform, but there's more things that I could speak to than that.
That's what I'm finding for myself.
Yeah.
Just being more myself.
Yeah.
Serves my business.
Isn't it interesting
better?
How it's so hard to become yourself?
It's so hard. Like, it's so weird.
I'm so perplexed with that because it's like, damn, just be me. But why is that so difficult? You know, like, what are all of those fears and those thoughts and those feelings and emotions around, like, just being, because it should be the easiest thing in the world.
It should be, but it's hard to accept you.
Yeah.
It's really hard to accept what's real, what's special, what's unique and what's good. It's kind of hard to address. It's easier to accept what I'm out of shape.
Yeah.
I don't have this like perfect man beard.
Yeah.
Like all of these things.
Yeah.
Right. It's easy to call those out.
Well, and also you wonder like, are the things I'm doing, are those me or those things I've adapted and seen that I thought like, oh, that particular thing represents success. So let me fit into that thing.
Totally.
Right. And then you don't even, you get so lost from, well, is that who I am or is that what I'm trying to be?
That's right.
And that's a difficult question to ask and a hard answer.
I think look at who you're attracted to. Who do you look up to in the world? It doesn't, you know, it doesn't need to be like the attraction is broader than like a sexual
I know what you
thing,
mean.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm attracted to people that are original, that are acting as themselves. It's inspiring to see somebody who really feels like they're in this flow state with who they are. Or they're accepting of it and they're just being that. And there's no posturing. There's no, it's weird when you feel that inauthenticity.
Yeah.
Somebody. It's weird. You're like, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, you can sense that energy of
you
like.
You can totally see it.
Yeah.
And everybody can. I think we all have that radar.
That intuition to know.
Yeah.
I'm reading a book right now called Cues by Vanessa Van Edwards. And it's all about all these cues that we instinctually know without like consciously knowing.
Yeah.
Like the way someone's hands are, the way their body language is, like all these, the way their mouth is, like that we decipher unbeknownst to us on how we relate with someone else, which is interesting, you know?
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it's so easy to get caught in your head.
Yeah.
I think that's the challenge. That's my big challenge. It's just not get stuck.
Yeah, get out of your own way.
Right here. Yeah, just start living. Just be free and flowy. And like, it's a super weird thing to even talk about, but.
You're so right, though.
It is that.
And it's only weird because we don't talk about it enough. Those are the things we actually should be talking about.
I know. And it's weird also because it's very hard to define.
Yeah.
Because it's a feeling. It's feeling stuff. And feeling stuff is hard to put words to for me.
Absolutely.
So.
Okay. So then a couple questions before we wrap it up. The first one I ask is, what's your biggest win in your life?
Marrying my wife.
I thought you might say
that. Brownie points.
Yeah.
No, truly though, I mean, that's changed my life. And the biggest win in the world of business?
Well, that's the thing. You get to define it for yourself. So I'm not going to put parameters on how you see it. So you've got the freedom to answer that in whatever way you feel is most appropriate.
I mean, my biggest win in life is that I hit the jackpot in being able to live a life on my own terms. I come from a very fortunate kind of upbringing, and I've gone through hard things. Everyone kind of seems to, but my life has remained really good and really fortunate amidst all of that. And to find a life partner that is bold, that is willing to take risks, that is my biggest champion and supports me, to feel that support in this weird journey. I have a weird journey. In my adult years, it's not linear, and it's very uncommon, because it's always been kind of just made up on my own terms. I've never had a long job at a certain place, and I've always had that support, and to do what I love, to be able to express myself.
Yeah. You really live your passion, which is uniquely
uncommon.
And for
people to value that with their actual dollars is kind of special. You know what I'm saying? It's really special for me. It's challenging. I mean, it's driven me to the depths of despair to to have a career of that type of expression. I put my soul into everything, and it's tough. It pulls everything out, and it really requires as much as you can give it, and that's challenging. But man, how lucky is that?
No kidding.
How lucky is that? Many people have so many mundane jobs that they have to do.
Yeah.
And multiples or whatever. I mean, like, we all are in different circumstances, but yeah, I think that's probably my biggest win. I've lived a very charmed life in my own rights, to be able to do it on my own terms and to exist in beautiful places, St. George and Encinitas and New Zealand. And
yeah, you know,
those are great places.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man. So I've gotten lucky. I recognize it. And, my life's good. And I think it's good because I see it that way too.
You're so right. Yeah. You are what you make it. And as humans, we all want to be right. So if you are going to say your life is good, you'll find all the reasons why it's good.
100%.
If you're to say my life is challenging, you'll find all the reasons why that's true. Right.
So true.
You can make it whatever you want it to be. So then, I know we've already had some really tough conversations today, but I always ask this and I didn't want to not ask it, because of what you shared, but what's your biggest loss?
Yeah. Loss of my family.
Yeah.
definitely, you know, my dad and my brother, we're gone. They're gone.
Yeah.
From the earth. But it blew my family apart.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think we've ever reconstructed it in the same way, nor could we.
Yeah.
Nor do we need to. I love my family. I'm grateful for that. But that's hard to argue.
Yeah.
That's the biggest
loss. Yeah, I knew that's where you'd go. I do have one question, though, that just made me think of. When you were doing that meditation where you were being propelled forward and there was a stone under each of your feet, what was there anything that you were doing unique at that time to have such a powerful meditation, or were you just doing your normal practice?
I was on a mushroom journey.
Okay.
Yeah. I had actually done a detox, a colonic.
And okay, so you cleared your body out of all the impurities.
Yeah. You know, I've been on a journey. I've done several types of like medicine journeys over the last 18 months. That one was a very large, dose and kind of just big experience. And I've had a few of those, but yeah, that's where that.
Okay.
What's happening?
And do you feel like that powerful meditation has shifted your ability to move forward?
I would say it's addressed one of the single largest hangups in my life, which is a fear that the future is not going to work out.
Yeah.
Unless I'm controlling it.
Yeah.
In some fashion. To just
trusting it.
I can trust my life. The stone continues to be there. Yeah. If I look back, it's actually always been there. There's always been a stone underneath me.
You just can't see the ones in front
of you.
That's
that lucky charmed life thing, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Or something. I don't know. But the fact is the stone's always there. And I can't make it be there.
Yeah. You just got to take the step.
I have to trust that it's going to be there.
So have you seen benefits in your life since you've had that and had that understanding and like that connectivity of like trust within yourself?
Yeah. We'll have to have another combo, but dude, I've changed the entire face of my business in the last year.
Wow.
Which is amazing. And it's become a much better solution. I've been able to rest into my life inside. Like, and what I mean by rest, I've been able to feel at ease.
Yeah.
Instead of always on edge and tight. Like that's your nervous system binding up, you know, and that's why breathwork, cold therapy and all those things, they teach you how to regulate that.
Yeah.
I've been able to figure out how to integrate.
I love that. What a great like visualization of what, because everyone can understand that feeling.
That cold.
Of like, yeah. Like just that clinch of like, oh God, you know.
How often do you feel that just in an everyday scenario when you have 20, you know, people trying to talk to you?
Yeah.
They need to talk to you right now. They got a schedule. You got to meet deadlines tomorrow and the day after next week.
That phone call from your client. Sometimes if your initial reaction is, then you got to fix something.
So do that. That's the change I've noticed is I don't feel that reaction anymore. I get phone calls. I see messages go out from my team. I used to be this need to control. A message would go out from my team to our client. Oh shit. What did they just send to them?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like if I didn't look at it, I'm not feeling cold. Now I don't even have to see it. I trust.
Yeah.
I can trust those around me. I can trust myself. I can trust my life.
Yeah.
And it's true right now. And that's not to say something's not going to happen.
Because life is like this.
It changes. Yeah. But in the moment and for the last 3 months now, 4 months since that experience.
Yeah.
It's remained true. And that's a long period for me.
Yeah.
To feel that way.
Yeah.
To truly feel that way. And I'm not posturing here, to be actually cognizant that I feel good inside. And it's more of like that nervous system feel good.
Yeah.
It's that relaxing.
Yeah. Your body's at ease.
Yeah. I feel happy. I'm sleeping good. I'm trying to do these good practices of eating well.
Yeah.
Trying to remain active. Really focusing in on the relationships in my life that really mean a lot, and putting as much emphasis there.
Yeah.
As much time there. That's where I find so much joy. I think that's life's greatest currency.
For sure.
Is the relationships we have. So yeah, that's a lot of change. It's really hard to even convey how much change out of that.
I love it. That's amazing. And we scheduled this podcast forever ago too. So it's like, even from when you said you're going to come on it till today, like what a different experience that we've
had. I'm on
a
journey.
I love it.
And it's been a beautiful one. It's been a couple years in the making.
And thank you for sharing it too. Because I think part of the problem is there's a lot of people on journeys, but they're scared to share.
Yeah.
And so then, but people need to hear it so that they can take that step and they can trust that that stone's going to be underneath their feet.
Yeah. And I get it. It's weird to do alternative things.
Yeah, even tell my friends about the cleanse. They look at me like you're crazy.
And it is crazy.
Yeah.
I get it. It's not normal. It's normal to just like crush hamburgers and pizza and hot dogs every day. Like, I like that stuff. I like eating good food. Believe me, I'm all about it. But it feels amazing to feel good.
No kidding.
It feels so good.
Okay, last and final question is, how do you define success?
Oh, man. I think all the things I've been talking about, feeling good about my life.
Yeah.
I think that's the greatest form of success. I love my life. And I can't say I always have. I think that's true success.
I love that. That's so good. Well, is there anything that you want to leave the audience with before we cut the episode short, or not short, but ended? Is there anything you want to share with them or places they can connect with you?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of a hermit. I really am. I sit on my property in Diagonal, or I'm in California and I'm chilling on the beach and I just kind of do my thing.
Yeah.
But you can always, you can find me on Instagram. I've got a one of a kind name, Tav Calico.
Okay.
So you look me up if you want. I don't post very often. I don't know the last time. Sometimes I'll get on the Instagram stories.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I had parting words, I'd just say, try to find your happiness and trust that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard. You know, you gotta figure out what that means for yourself.
That's the key. You gotta define it for yourself, because don't chase someone else's happiness.
Yeah. And don't worry about what other people think about it either.
Yeah.
I don't think that helps. Like, look at it from your own perspective, because it's your life you're living. It's not anybody else's. No one has rights over that. You don't owe anyone anything. All you need to do is just try to find your happiness in life. Whatever that can look like. And it's true happiness. It's lasting happiness. It's not fleeting in the moment, you know, kind of thing that I'm talking about here. And so, I don't know. Without talking another hour about what I'm saying, that's what it is.
Okay. Well, I love that. Thank you so much for being so honest and vulnerable and transparent. Amen. I absolutely love the conversation. I didn't know that's what it was going to be.
I didn't either.
But it was awesome. I loved it. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you, Cody. You're the man.